Hey everyone, this is Jeannie. I use she, her pronouns, and you're listening to Sex Talk Happy Hour, a podcast hosted by the New York City Alliance Against Sexual Assault. Before we begin, we have a little bit of a cool full circle story to share with you. So for those of you who have been listening for a while, you know that our second episode of the podcast featured a woman named Rihanna, who unfortunately had experienced some severe sexual harassment at her place of work. She was also featured in the Survivor Magazine project that we talked about in episode 4, and now she's designed a handful of t-shirts called No More Shh that are available for purchase on her website, which will be in our episode description. Not only that, but Rihanna is giving a percentage of the proceeds to the Alliance, so thank you, Rihanna. You are amazing for including us in your project. We are humbled and honored. If you feel so inclined or you want to see what those t-shirts look like, you can check it out, show your support. We'd love to see you wearing those shirts out and about in New York City. Okay, so I'm really excited about today's episode. We're talking about comedy. Full disclosure, we picked this topic in part because we want to see you at the Alliance's annual comedy night at Gotham Comedy Club. We're featuring 4 amazing stand-up comedians on November 13th, which is a Tuesday, and tickets are on sale right now. There is a 2-drink minimum, and appetizers and food are available, so do come hungry and get ready to laugh. All of the proceeds support the Alliance's programming efforts, so we hope that you'll join us. It's my favorite work event. Information on how to get your tickets is going to be included in our episode description. And if you can't be there in person, but you still want to donate and you want to support us, you can also find out how to do that on our Eventbrite link. Okay, so comedy. Comedy has always been important. Everybody loves the funny kid in school. That's definitely why my younger brother was way more popular than I was in high school. The first stand-up special I saw was the 2002 Robin Williams Live on Broadway, where he talks about the invention of golf, and I honestly think it's still one of the best written bits of all time. We all have our favorite comedy moments. Maybe there are inside jokes with your best friend, a particularly poignant piece from a stand-up special, or a funny bit from an improv show that you saw once. Either way, these wonderful moments of laughter get sealed into our memories, and that's one of the reasons why it's so great. Comedy has always played an important role in our culture. It is a common way to cope with our fears and insecurities. It can be a strong way to make commentary on social or political issues, and it can be a distraction from the rest of the world. Like all artists, comedians work really hard, and today you get to hear from 2 amazing women about their work and what it's like to live in the comedy world, including Carmen Lynch, who will be performing at our comedy night. As always, our episodes come with a warm self-care heads up. Please take care of yourselves as you listen. My first interview is a conversation I had with Brooke Cardis, an Ohio-based comedian who I think you will really enjoy hearing from. Apologies in advance, there's definitely some background giggling on my part throughout this conversation. I just couldn't help it. So hi, I would love for you to introduce yourself, your pronouns, if you're comfortable sharing those, and where you make people laugh.
Great. My name is Brooke Cardis, she, her, hers. I'm a stand-up comedian. I tour all over the country. I'm based in Columbus, Ohio, but really do a lot of traveling around the Midwest. I believe in staying in your swing state and doing the work. A lot of my friends have moved to the coasts. A lot of my friends who are comedians will be listening to this, and they're like, why do you live in LA and New York? And for me, the activism component of my comedy means I stay in the places where I can change the most minds.
That's awesome. I think that's particularly admirable because people tend to stay in their bubbles, and I'm totally guilty of that, so I'm kind of calling myself out here.
I mean, I'm still in my bubble. Like, I'm still on the east side of Columbus. It's a really queer neighborhood, and me and my, like, gender nonconforming partner are in our bubble. You know what I mean? With my bulldog, it's real on brand. So I don't necessarily, you know, I think it's difficult to do that, but it's a good reminder when I get booked at, like, a Moose Lodge, you know, outside of Dayton, Ohio, that I can still be challenged and pushed to have really difficult conversations through comedy with folks who maybe would not typically run into someone like me or feel comfortable connecting with someone like me.
That sounds awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And actually, you already started answering my next question, which was sort of about your comedy career. And you had mentioned activism earlier. How do those 2 things kind of play in with each other?
Yeah, I really tried to keep them separate for a while, but realized neither were successful without being inextricably intertwined. So I went to law school and really knew I wanted to help the LGBTQ community, trans folks, gender nonconforming folks, and kind of find a space for that. And I was keeping my comedy separate and, you know, talking about dating or, you know, sandwiches or whatever things you talk about. And I discovered the more I made my activism a part of my comedy and really made sure I talked about those things that mattered to me, racial justice and climate change and, yeah, queer identity, but queer identity in that political sense, I connected more with the audience and I had more fun. I'm still an attorney and activist, and I still do legal observing for a lot of different protests, for Black Lives Matter, for all sorts of things. But I really feel like for me, I can connect with people on such a, not even grassroots level, but just a really colloquial, direct level through comedy that you really don't have as an attorney. Because like people kind of put attorneys in this place of being, well, not only liars, but also, you know, holier than thou. And that's not really how I want to come off. And I'm trying to avoid that. I got a really great compliment from a woman who has been following my career for 3 years in comedy. And she said, I had no idea you were an attorney. And that made me feel really good because I don't want that to be the kind of thing that stays with you. I want you to remember the things I say and not letters behind my name.
Sure. I really like the way that you phrased that. So in this kind of current era, you know, we're just sort of coming out on the tail end of things happening on the national level with the Supreme Court. What is it like to be a comedian slash activist right now?
I mean, I think it's as brutal as it is for anyone else. I don't think there's a good, you know... It's so hard. I think self-care for a lot of folks at this time might be getting margaritas a little earlier in the day or like, you know, taking a bath or whatever. I don't know. But for me, it's getting on stage more and writing more because so much is happening and it's happening so fast. I mean, we think about the headlines in the New York Times last week. They're not even blips on our radar anymore. And, you know, the catastrophic climate change information, the tax fraud, because our news cycle is so fast. So I like to try my best to marinate on what I can and get nuggets of comedy out of that. Again, to just kind of reframe it for folks, not in a way that it bombards them, because when you're at a comedy show, you're there to kind of forget about the world a little bit. And I respect and understand that. And I will make you laugh, but I don't have the privilege of forgetting about the news. And people who have less privilege than me, which frankly as a white cis woman is most people, do not have that privilege. You know, it's great that you could walk into a comedy club and be like, yeah, I'm just going to hear about, oh my gosh, these male comedians and their zany wives for 3 hours. Oh, why do you got to make it so political? The thing is I don't have a choice. And it's part of my life. My existence is inherently political. So making it a space where we can have fun and we can joke about it in a way that maybe isn't typical.
I want to circle back to something that you had said earlier about how fast our news cycle is. And I feel like right now we're in this era of comedy where everything is, you either make the joke in the moment or the moment is gone. And what is that like for someone who writes their own jokes and does their own stuff and is trying to get on stage more?
Yeah, I think that's really a really poignant question because it's really difficult. And in Twitter age, where we're trying to make this quick joke, and then if it's not in that exact moment, like you said, it's not relevant. I've had to kind of dig deeper into some anecdotal work and say, all right, why is this trending? What about this? Whatever it is. Is it the hypocrisy? Is it the absolute apocryphal feeling of it? Is it super hyperbolic? What is it that makes it so funny to people? Because you can usually find something, you know, what's the kernel of that and kind of be able to expand on that. Because, you know, I'll write a joke that starts off as maybe a tweet, but by the end of the month, it's a 3-minute joke. And by the end of the year, it's my 10-minute absolute anchor in my hour set. So making sure you give jokes time to marinate. My goal in September between you and me was to do more writing. But frankly, the news cycle was so fast. I was going up on stage, just, you know, throwing stuff on the wall and seeing what stuck, because every day was a different news story. So, you know, it's trying to find things that are topical, but also that can be long lasting, because I don't want to have a joke and have to throw it out the next day.
Right. Has that happened?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, it's just absolutely, it's absolutely crazy. And when I, you know, when I travel internationally, I'll try to really watch the headlines to watch what folks in other countries are seeing from the US, because that's really fascinating. Mm. and hit those. And that's actually not what US viewers see all the time. So knowing where you're headed, what kind of news they're even having access to on a regular basis can help you frame at least how you put a joke. It's not like you're writing a whole new set depending on what region of the country you're going to. But my set, outside of Indianapolis is going to be very different than my set in Burbank, California. And that it should be, because that's thoughtful to the audience and you want to meet the audience where they're at.
I really like the way that you said that, meeting somewhere where they're at. I feel like you're probably like an honorary social worker.
Oh my God. No, I could never do that. That sounds so hard.
You're halfway there.
Oh my gosh. No.
So, I mean, thinking about comedy is, I think right now a lot of people are leaning on comedy to be a form of self-care, whether they're watching specials online or they're going to shows or they're immersing themselves in improv for the first time, whatever it is. And one thing about the comedy world, like many fields, is that it tends to be very male dominated. And I'm wondering what that's like for you or what that's been like for you throughout your career.
Yeah, I think it's all careers. I mean, every woman I talk to in every city is, you know, when you ask them what they do for a living, and then it's a follow-up with, yeah, I'm the only woman on my team. I'm the only woman in my department. I'm the only leader in my department. I'm the only leader in my field. You know, it's really, really common. We're the minority in so many professions. What I think makes this profession so unique to me is that we are doing this work in bars after hours with substances that hopefully aren't in most workplaces. And we are just in a space where it feels casual and it feels loose, but it's our workplace. And I think that has been something that is really challenging, because sometimes that's a little difficult to navigate. And I mean, I've had some really incredible opportunities and I've shared that news with my male colleagues, and then they've responded with, well, who did you sleep with at that club to get that gig? You know, and it's laughable, because some of these bookers, I mean, you're not going to sleep with these bookers. Just kidding. They're all great. And I respect them a lot. So you know what I mean? But so that's the response. And that's kind of what you deal with. And that is a universal thing all women go through. So many women, when they get a promotion or they get a raise or they even make a really exciting lateral move in their career, will share it. And a male colleague or a male friend will kind of push back and say, oh, that was because you're pretty. Oh, you know, you're such a charmer or something like that. And it's all these coded language. At least the male comedian that I told that to just came out and said it, that he thought I was, you know, sleeping with this booker to get this gig. But, you know, what does that do to the environment? That doesn't build trust. You know, and what you really want in a workplace, in all workplaces, is trust. So I think the current climate has kind of eroded that trust, but in an important way, so that we can build it back up, because it hasn't been there. You know what I mean? We've really kind of been at this place of stagnation. So I think this work is necessary. And I think it's really, really important to move the art form forward and to move what is a really difficult balance of work and fun forward.
Yeah. I love the way you phrase that. I mean, the comedy world definitely hasn't been without their own, we'll call them scandals, I guess, for to keep them low key. But one topic that constantly comes up, for because I have a lot of friends who maybe they're not comedians themselves, but they are comedy appreciators, and there's a lot of conversation around like a rape joke. Like, is that ever a joke that can be made? You know, I'm thinking specifically about Daniel Tosh's joke a couple years ago where he quote unquote joked, air quotes here, about a woman in his audience being raped by male audience members during his set. And so I'm just thinking, like, is there ever a time where that kind of joke, a rape joke, however you define that, is appropriate? And if so, where, when, and by whom?
You know, I've heard some really amazing jokes from people who have survived sexual assault. And I personally have a TED talk about it, about my sexual assault. I did a performance at TEDx specifically about it. Now, I got laughter during that, during my TED talk. I've gotten laughter when I've talked about my sexual assault. I've seen comedians do amazing work on that. But that isn't jokes about rape, right? Or those aren't jokes about rape, is how I should put it. They're actually jokes about resilience and survival and friendship and recovery. And those are all things we can relate to. Those are the universal truths behind it. So for me, when someone says, well, I don't want to talk about anything controversial, I get that a lot. Booker, you know, a booker will say, hey, don't talk about anything controversial. I'm like, okay, well, you know, first of all, that's impossible because everything's controversial. But what makes rape jokes terrible is when the victim is the joke. So if you can make a joke that is about sexual assault, is about rape, and it is not about the it is not at the victim's expense, that to me isn't a rape joke. And that's where I'm like, yes. I mean, one of my favorite comedians talks about his sexual assault in a way on stage that is so remarkable that I left changed, and I leave changed every time I see him tell that joke. But again, it's not about the assault, right? It's about the aftermath and what he went through and getting tested. And we've all sat in that room waiting for any sort of medical results. We can all relate to that. So it's that universality. It's that space of we can all relate to this, combined with, oh my gosh, look at what he went through, and look at how strong he is. So I think it's definitely both. I think a perfect example of someone who, again, made the rape joke about the victim and at the victim's expense is Daniel Tosh. And it's not surprising, because I don't ever think he's seen himself as someone who's had to go through a lot of adversity or been a victim. He's never self-identified with that. So I think that's why in our culture that really was just so jarring.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for sharing your experience and also your response to that. I'm definitely going to go look up your TEDx talk now.
Well, it's not light. Spoiler alert.
Well, I will still watch it. Any experiences as a comedian on stage that, like, anything you want your audience members to know, anyone who might come see one of your shows, pieces of advice, or just like, quote unquote, like, stop heckling people, whatever it might be, anything that you would want your audience members to know?
I love when audience members come in open and ready for new ideas. I think right now comedy is such a good place to go, because we are finding the absurdism in an already absurd world. Like, it is already absurd. It's always been absurd. But, you know, having that space to talk about it, I think is really great. And I think getting out and getting to a comedy show right now, I'm not saying self-care isn't great as a bath, but it is a good space to go to. It is a good space to take yourself to when you've had a week or you've had a day and you just want to laugh. And I've used it too. I've used going to improv shows and stand-up shows to just get myself out of my own head, because it's so easy to sit on your phone and curl in and read Twitter until you cry. Whatever side of the political aisle you're on, it's not about that. You know, getting out and watching other people's perspectives can only help you. And I think that's important in cities and in towns, and it doesn't matter, you know, where you are in the country, seeing those different perspectives can recharge you in a way that I don't think any other art form can. It really is. I mean, it's my church, but obviously it's my church. You already knew that. So,
right. Thank you so much. So this is a cheesy question, but I like to try and end interviews on a higher/weird cheesy note, because that's who I am as a person. I've owned it. Do you have any jokes that you would be willing to share with our listeners?
Oh, I officiated a wedding last weekend, which is one of my favorite things to do. And I was in the back room before the wedding started with the flower girl for about, you know, 45 minutes, I think. And she found out I was a stand-up comedian and she wanted to tell me some jokes. And so I will tell you a joke that she told me. She said, two muffins are in an oven and one muffin looks at the other and says, oh, it's getting hot in here. And the other muffin goes, ah, a talking muffin. And I laughed really hard. I was totally sober, but that one really got me. And I really appreciated that she was so on brand, being ready to audition for me backstage before a wedding. So that's the joke I will leave you with. But if you want to hear jokes that aren't about muffins, you can check out my iTunes album. It went number one in April 2018. It's called I Have Straight Friends and Other Confessions. I beat out all the straight white men for 38 hours. It's pretty great. It was like 30 John Mulaney albums, and I beat them all out. So you can check that out. And my first album's also on Spotify and iTunes and everywhere. It's called Size L for Lady. So those are out. My website is up to date on my shows. I'm all over the country all the time. So come out, buy an album, and introduce yourself, and I'd love to chat.
I love that. And where can people find you on social media if that's something you're open to sharing?
Oh, yes. You can obviously look me up on Facebook and Twitter at Brooke Cardis. And then my Instagram handle is not gay as in happy, with underscores between the words, because of course it's not gay as in happy. And if you want to finish the rest of that, you can check out my Instagram handle. It's not safe for work. So definitely check those out and follow me, and let's start a conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Brooke.
Thanks.
Thank you, Brooke. Listeners, let me tell you, after my chat with Brooke, I submitted an official application to be her new best friend. I have not yet heard back, but I'm not going to lose hope, and I'll be including Brooke's social media information in the episode description if you also want to submit an application for new best friend, or if you just want to listen to her stand-up show. All right, my next interview is with Carmen Lynch, who is kind of a big deal, and you're going to find out why soon. Like I said at the top of the show, Carmen is one of our featured comedians for Comedy Night, so if you like what you hear today or you want to see more, make sure you come out and see her set in person on November 13th. Here's my interview with Carmen. Hi, Carmen. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. I'm really, really appreciate you taking your time out of your schedule to chat with us on our humble little podcast. So tell me about yourself and where you make people laugh.
Well, thanks for having me. I am based in New York City, so I'm usually here if I'm not on the road. I am generally at the Comedy Cellar downtown, but I do perform a lot at Gotham and Caroline's and other clubs in the city.
Awesome. I mean, those are all really recognizable names for anyone who pays attention to comedy even a little bit. And actually, to your comfort level, would you be willing to share with us a little bit about your comedy career?
Sure. I've been here my whole career. I started in New York City. I fell into it by accident. So it's nice to fall into comedy in one of the biggest comedy cities. So I never had to move, and there's just constantly, you know, work here, and there's a lot of comedians here who help you realize, you know, how much you need to write and just keep up and do your best. There's a lot of competition. I guess I just, you know, stayed here. I fell into it. I loved it. And now I travel a lot. I travel overseas a lot. I've done several late night TV shows, like, you know, The Late Show with David Letterman, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and then a couple of other ones, Conan. And Inside Amy Schumer, The Good Wife. So I act as well, which is great. But, you know, there's just such a variety of stand-up and venues and cities to go to. So it just really keeps this career very interesting.
That is so cool. I feel like a lot of our listeners are going to be really excited that you've performed on so many of these very recognizable shows. that's so, so cool. What is it like to be a comedian right now?
I mean, you always want to make people laugh and, you know, be original and just have a voice, have something to say. But in times like this where there's just so much, you know, disagreement or people just don't, you know, I feel like our country is very divided right now. So I think it's a really, especially a good time to make people laugh.
I couldn't agree more. And actually, just as a shameless plug for our agency, on November 13th, you're going to be at Gotham Comedy Club, where our agency is actually hosting our annual Comedy Night, which is our fundraiser, and all of the proceeds go towards the Alliance's programmings and projects. And you are actually one of our featured comedians. So I'm curious if you're willing to answer, why did you take this gig? Like, why did you agree to like, we're really happy to have you, and what motivated you to take the gig?
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm very excited to do the gig. I know Harris Bloom, who is, you know, who booked the gig, and he's a great guy, and he runs great shows, and he's always trying to help a good cause, so all of that really makes a show better, and to really give back to you guys and, you know, make people laugh for a good cause. It makes that all the more important, I think. I think it's important to do that, not just, you know, because you always, it's fun for us to do stand-up, but it's also fun to make people laugh. But then on top of that, to do it for a good cause, it's like a bonus.
Yay. That's awesome. And thank you. I mean, seriously, we're really, really excited to have you. I've sort of quietly been reading your Twitter, and I'm really excited to see your set.
Thanks.
So from your point of view, and I don't know if this is a topic that's like really tiring to answer as a comedian or if this is something that you get asked a lot, but from your point of view, are there ever any topics in comedy that are quote unquote like no touchies, or is comedy one of the places where pretty much everything is up for grabs?
Well, I like to think of comedy as a place where there are no boundaries and you should share whatever you want to share. But that being said, it has to be funny. So if you're going to bring up a topic of conversation, but there's no release, there's no laugh at the end of it, then it kind of puts the audience in an awkward position, because now there's something out there that's uncomfortable. But if you can make something uncomfortable funny, I think it just, you know, it's nice when a comedian doesn't have any boundaries and they can say whatever they want. Because if not, then it's what's the freedom of speech? Like, let's remember this is a room where we're all here to laugh and, you know, remember that it is just a comedy show.
Sure. And do you have any responses? Because I know that at least in my personal group of friends, there are definitely a lot of opinions around, like, topics that are off, like you are not allowed to touch them, even if you are a comedian. And I know a lot of people who are in comedy feel the opposite, kind of what you were just saying. And that being said, that means that there are always going to be quote-unquote controversial topics or whatever. And I'm wondering if that's ever come up for you in your career.
Yeah, one time, I mean, if sometimes you can just tell by the audience's not laughing or just kind of going, ooh, if, you know, how they feel about a joke. But, you know, in some ways that just makes me want to go down that road further just to... Oh, well, you can't handle that. Well, then you're definitely not going to like this one. But then there's like a 50% of the audience that does laugh. So it really is a very subjective art form. But I don't know. I guess the only one I can think of is one time I talked about scoliosis and this woman just stood up and just started cursing me because she said it was not funny when people have a scoliosis. And I had to tell her, like, well, I'm only talking about this because I had it and I wore a back brace and it was very uncomfortable. But I wanted to make light of it because I went through a lot, you know, in middle school with, you know, dealing with it. So I think a lot of times if you've dealt with something, you should be allowed to talk about it because you're not making fun of others. You're just dealing with it yourself.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to agree with you there, actually. And that actually is bringing up a topic that I did not tell you I was going to ask you about this, but it's bringing up the concept that I've heard called punching up versus punching down. Is that something that you think about when you're writing your set and your jokes and kind of your pieces?
I mean, yeah, if it's happened to me or if it's my experience, I feel like I should have the right to speak about it. And that being said, like most of the time, if I ever do bring up scoliosis, it's positive. It's someone after the show saying my niece has scoliosis and I really enjoyed your, you know, you're sharing your issues with it or that kind of thing. It's not usually negative. That was just one experience. And I think the woman was extremely intoxicated when she did that. But yeah, I mean, I guess it goes back to what I said, like if there's something that someone wants to say and they have a point and it is comedy versus just kind of bringing up something to make fun of, you know, a group or whatever, then it's up to them. But, you know, it's some subjects are touchy, you know, you kind of have to be careful. There's nothing funny about pedophilia, but I have heard pedophilia jokes that work, you know, because they're mostly about finding the joke. It's not about pedophilia itself.
Right, right. Or the victims of, right.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's always really interesting to hear that perspective from a comedian, like to hear kind of how you experience the world as someone whose job is to make people laugh. I think the bottom line is there's always going to be someone who doesn't laugh at a joke, right? Depending on
yeah.
who they are or whether or not they've had a few drinks, as you were saying. So, you know, one thing that I've been really heartened by is I'm seeing a lot more women enter the comedy world. And I'm wondering if you have any advice or thoughts to give to anyone who's starting out in comedy or thinking about starting out in comedy.
Specifically for females, I would just say, you know, just keep writing jokes and be funny. I mean, this is for anybody, male or female. But I think, you know, there's a lot out there of like, oh, females aren't funny, blah, 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 blah. Like, I honestly just would tell someone to just ignore that because funny, this is what my teacher said when I first started, funny rises. I always thought that was funny. And if you keep writing and you're funny, you will get things. You will, you know, your name will rise. It will get to the top. It doesn't mean you're going to be like the most famous person in the world, but your name, people will know who you are. So just don't worry about your persona and your voice. And don't worry about, I find that some newer comics try to emulate, try to copy successful comedian styles. And that's not gonna help at all. Just, I almost find it easier to not watch too much stand-up so I can find my own unique voice. Yeah, I watch a lot of live stand-up. If I'm at the club and, you know, one of my favorites walks in, I definitely watch him or her, but I don't watch a lot on, like, Netflix. But that's just a personal choice. There's no right or wrong.
Gotcha. That's brilliant. I love that. So, obviously, people can come see you on November 13th, but otherwise, if they're not in New York or if they're not able to make it, where can people find you? Social media, website, Twitter, all that stuff.
All of my social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook are at Carmen Comedian. And I also have a website, carmenlynch.com, that has my schedule and videos and everything else about myself.
Gotcha. And you have an iTunes album too, right?
Yes, it's called Dance Like You Don't Need the Money. And it was chosen as SiriusXM's Album of the Year last year.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool.
So I was very excited. Yeah, I was very excited. And that, you can buy that on my website, carmenlynch.com. There's a little click here for Dance Like You Don't Need the Money.
Perfect. Well, I'm definitely going to include all of that information in our episode description so that people can easily find it. And otherwise, hopefully they'll be coming out to see you in person on November 13th.
That would be great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Carmen. It was such a pleasure to speak with you, and I absolutely cannot wait to see your set in just a few weeks. Honestly, folks, have a look at her Twitter account. It's quite a joy. Okay, now it's time for our new segment, Let's Talk Sex. This is our newest segment where I ask a question about sex and relationships to a random person and see what they have to say. This week, we have Bianca. Hello, thank you so much for being here with us for Let's Talk Sex. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Bianca. I'm 24 and I live in New York.
Awesome, Bianca. We're so happy you're here. All right. So what's your preferred way to check in with a sexual partner when you're not sure whether or not they're into what's going on?
Well, my biggest thing is communication is key. Okay. So I feel personally it's always better to check in with somebody when you're moving from, you know, like the making out stage to maybe touching each other more and maybe getting into more sexual ways. Just to make sure that you're okay, because some people are not okay with going further than kissing and some people are okay with going all the way. And you just have to continue to check in and make sure that the aisles of communication are open.
And how do you do that? Like, how do you check in to make sure that, like, everyone's on the same page?
Personally, for me, I would just be like, are you okay? Like, do you want to go further? Do you want to do this? Like, I'll straight up ask because I'm a very open person. So that's how I would check.
Perfect. Thanks, Bianca.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bianca. Listeners, if you want to be featured on our Let's Talk Sex segment, you can email me at jyoon@svfreenyc.org. It'll also be in our episode description. For a final time, listeners, if you want to come join us for Comedy Night on November 13th at Gotham Comedy Club, tickets are on sale right now. It's a really fun night, and I know you're going to have a great time. Make sure you check out our episode description for more details. Seriously, I really can't wait to see you there. Thank you to the Alliance staff for supporting this project and to Nikki Cruz, our social media expert. A big, big thank you to Brooke and Carmen for taking time out of your busy schedules to talk to me about your careers. We really, really loved hearing from you. If you found our episode interesting today, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and leave us a review. That's how other people can find us. Let us know if you have any topics you want to hear about or if you have any feedback or comments whatsoever. We're always open to feedback. You can tweet at us at NYCAASA or message us on Instagram at NYC Alliance and make sure you use our hashtag SexTalkHappyHour, all one word. Thanks so much for listening today. Ciao for now. We'll see you November 13th.